We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. Before we start the programme, here's a brief but vitally important announcement.
The news quiz wishes to assure its listeners that the appointment of Michael Grade, the man once dubbed Britain's pornographer-in-chief, as governor of the BBC, will not in any way affect the high standards of this programme, except for those of you listening to our new digital channel, BBC 4. Who should press their red buttons now to hear the panellists answer the questions naked as the day they were born.
And we start with a classified ad seen in Farringdon's local What's On free sheet, read by Brian Perkins.
1985 Toyota Corolla automatic, 8,846,662 miles. Good condition, MOT October.
Thanks to MC Lovell for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Jeremy Hardy. And opposite them on my left, Linda Smith and Sandy Toksvig. Andy, the traditional easiest first question is for you. Who's had to tell his nation that Iraq is a hard place?
Well, this is George Bush, who finds himself a little bit in the news this week. He did a live press conference to the American nation, and he also decided that the best way to appease the anger of the Arabs was to give Israel everything it wants. It's been bothering me for a while what it is about George Bush Jr. that is so absurd. It suddenly came to me. I was watching some footage of him walking up the red carpet with President Mubarak of Egypt, and George Bush's arms and legs are too short. As you watch them, they are too short. So the effect, he looks like an escaped ventriloquist dummy who somehow got out of the suitcase and made a bolt for freedom. So I can't look at him now without seeing Dick Cheney's hand up his back.
I think he's a case for alcoholics not recovering, really, isn't he? I just think, slap a tequila patch on him, you know. Chill out, have a drink, for God's sake, George. Why should the rest of the world pay for your abstinence?
Give me eight tequila patches, I love the idea. Endlessly walk around with a bit of lime and a little bit of salt.
Yeah.
Rubbing your patch.
President Bush has used one of his very rare primetime press conferences to defend his policy on Iraq. The president has warned that a US withdrawal would be unthinkable. Though you should bear in mind that for George W. Bush, a number bigger than three is pretty well unthinkable. So 2 points to Andy. Jeremy, those who can do, those who can't teach. Those who can't teach become education secretary. Discuss. Using one side of the paper only.
Well, Charles Clerk refused the invitation to go to the NUT conference this Easter, and he said that he'd spent it instead strolling down the prom in Lowestoft, eating fish and chips. Now, looking at and listening to him, I'd say he spent his whole life strolling down the prom eating fish and chips.
He wasn't only eating fish and chips in Lowestoft, he was playing mini golf. What is mini golf?
You drive around in a mini.
Mini golf is crazy golf, isn't it? Where you know, you
that's pretty crazy.
Don't call it that now, they call it learning disabilities golf. McAvoy lashed out at the government and said that they were treating schools like Tesco's, and Clark said, no, that's not true. There would be benefits for heads who could turn round failing trolleys.
The supermarket thing, instead of making the schools more like supermarkets and shops, actually turn shops into schools. You know, just make the kids work in Starbucks rather than just getting it to sponsor the school. And they could learn. It'd be a sort of work experience thing, couldn't they? They'd learn, you know, cappuccino is the Italian for dishwater.
Doug McAvoy, the retiring General Secretary of the National Union of Teachers, used his last address to the conference to attack government education policy. A spokesman for the Department of Education attacked the speech as hot air and went on to say that they'd get Mr. McAvoy at playtime. Sandy, whose golden balls may have bounced out of their boundary.
Right, well,
I think there was some kind of clue there.
I know. I think it's time that Linda and I made a confession.
No, Sandy, remember the deal, the newspaper deal.
Yeah.
We've got an exclusive with Loot. We give them our story of our three in a bed romp with Bex, and they'll advertise a fridge freezer we're trying to get rid of.
We think it's a very fair exchange.
It's Bex Brian Perkins' nickname.
Yes. It's a shocking story. It really is. We were both appalled that a footballer may have had sex with somebody other than his wife.
What's a distinguishing feature on his scrotal area?
Of his... Please. Oh, I feel sick now.
It's probably a tattoo, really, isn't it?
I don't understand football at all.
Why a tattoo?
Please. Apparently, allegedly, the old king of Denmark had a tattoo on his area. And, and he could raise the flag of Denmark quicker than anybody.
Do people know the thermos flask joke? This is when he's still playing for Man U, because I don't know who the manager of Real Madrid is. Posh and Bex are in Selfridges, and they're looking around the kitchen department, and they say, thermos flask. And they say to the assistant, what's that in? And he says, well, sir, that's a thermos flask. He says, what's that dude in? And he says, well, it keeps hot things hot and cold things cold. And she says, oh, babe, you should get one of them. Take training, that'd be nice. For snacks and that. He says, it's a good idea, I'll get there. Have that, please. So he gets his thermos flask and he takes it training. He's in the changing rooms at Man U, his little thermos, and Fergie comes to him and says, what's that, son? He says, it's a thermos flask, boss. She says, what's that, do you then? He says, well, it keeps hot things hot and cold things cold. He says, what you got in there, son? She says, I've got 2 cups of coffee and a chuck ice.
Claims about the handsome England captain and his talented pop singer wife have been dismissed as ludicrous. Well, the England captain bit is true, but talented pop singer wife, that'll never stand up. Beckham's alleged mistress is apparently much classier than Posh Spice, which is a bit like saying you prefer Lambrusco to Blue Nun. Linda, listen to this. Linda, who'll be out on their ermine if they carry on claiming to be justified and ancient?
Well, apparently, Tony Blair is going to be reforming the Lords. I don't know why they split up to begin with, musical differences, but once he can find the drummer, they're back on the road again. I thought he'd done this. Every 2 weeks we have a question about this. What does the man do all day? He's going to get rid of fox hunting? No, still got fox hunting. He's going to reform the Lords? No, still got the Lords. I mean, if he didn't spend so much time running around with a bad crowd... he seems to have the same relationship with sort of murderous world leaders that Barbara Windsor had with the Krays. It's like, well, no, I know Mr. Putin was in the KGB, but he's always a gentleman to me. Pathetic.
They don't want the House of Lords to delay things. That's just irritating, isn't it? That's just annoying that they stop and think about things and go, wait a second, you have gone that little bit too fast. No, we don't want that. We want to skip things through as quickly as possible, but without actually getting rid of the House of Lords, because they look very nice on postcards.
Tony Blair has asked Lord Falconer, the Constitutional Affairs Secretary, to concentrate on reforming the powers of the Lords after Lord Saruman raised an army of orcs against the Commons. And at the end of round one, everybody's scores are level. And we start round two with a cutting from the Daily Express.
A man watched his 20-year-old car catch fire and explode when he tried to warm up the engine in freezing weather by setting fire to newspapers beneath it. Zlatko Gridin, 52, of Donja Stubica, Croatia, said, maybe I use too much paper.
Thanks to Anne Thomas of Chichester for sending that in. Andy, where were a Lara Lara run scored this week?
Well, this was... We just get those Frisians out of the studio. Well, I don't know about you, but it's been a very worrying couple of weeks, hasn't it? The world seems to have gone mad. We've got all these terrible events in Iraq and in the Middle East. It's like you get completely disorientated and lose your sense of reality. And what finally made that inescapable was England winning at cricket, which was deeply unsettling for the national psyche. And people have been wandering around in a daze, emotionally confused. But thank goodness things are back to normal, because in the last test in Antigua, Brian Lara managed to smash the England bowling for a world record innings of 400 not out. I don't know what will happen. Certainly a lot of the comedy world will go out of business if England start getting good at things. Terrible risk. I mean, you know, we won the rugby and now we're winning at cricket. It could be the end of England as we know.
If Tim Henman wins Wimbledon, I'm leaving the country.
Brian Lara had an astonishing feat of scoring a world record 400 not out in a fourth test against England this week. Scoring in the test series has been on the low side, as every cricket fan knows. If you're really looking for the runs, you should go to India. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, why could a ride with the Valkyries drive you to danger?
I think we know this. There's no great mystery to this. The people's driving is affected by music. And I think we know from German history the effect that the ride of the Valkyrie can have on people operating heavy machinery. So if you're in your car and you start playing Wagner, you will suddenly find yourself driving to Burnley and standing as a councillor. It's not good to play marching music of the Third Reich unless you're heading for Poland. In general, play something chill out. But we all know that music can be dangerous. I mean, yeah, if I ever listening to the radio, Celine Dion comes on, I just drive into the back of a petrol tanker. I know you say reach for the off button, but whatever's quickest. But on talk radio, it's good because they've got all those people who were disgraced in the 90s. All those people, you know, like James Whale. All those people have all got talked to. Phone in now. Tell us what you think. Should people with freckles be gassed? Phone in.
I can't listen to those commercial radio stations because I'm appalled by what they regard as news. Have you noticed this? They say things like, here is the news, I'm Sarah Smith. And you think, well, how's that news? I've got cramp in my leg. I am actually in quite a lot of pain, but don't worry.
If you've got an opinion about Andy Hamilton's leg, please call in.
A group of Canadian scientists have discovered that drivers who listen to loud up-tempo music are more dangerous on the road. The RSC survey concluded that the song Firestarter by The Prodigy is one of the worst tunes to drive to because of its fast beat, even though its lyrics are actually rather soothing.
I'm a firestarter, twisted firestarter. You're the firestarter, twisted firestarter. I'm the self-inflicted punk detonator. Yeah, I'm the one invented, twisted animator.
Sandy, who wants to give a teenage kick to the House of Commons?
Another thing. Well, they want young people to vote. Good Lord, isn't it bad enough? The idea is that young people who look like William Hague did when he first addressed the Conservative Party conference are a good thing. And so we should let them vote and become MPs. Young people. Voting. Oh, that's a very bad idea.
Next thing, it should be ladies.
Yes.
They'll have lady voteresses.
Lady voters and people who don't own land.
Because MPs are mostly middle-aged men, and being a teenager is quite similar to being a middle-aged man, really, because you suddenly look much older, but you still feel like a child, and you don't really know what you want to do with your life, and you find yourself bursting into tears for no reason.
Oh,
It's rumoured that the Electoral Commission report, due next week, will suggest lowering the minimum age for being an MP to 18 and the voting age to 16. Rumours abound that teenage MPs were soon to be a reality when workmen were seen fitting anti-slam doors, locks on the drinks cabinet and organising a constant supply of pizzas to the Commons. But it turned out to be just a refit of John Prescott's office. Linda, who will be saying, shiver me dentures as they walk the plaque in the teeth of a biting gale. Set summer.
This is a brilliant story about the Isle of Wight. Apparently they've got not many dentists on the Isle of Wight. I mean, in fact, not very good dentists, some of them. They just fill your teeth with coloured sand. Anyway, these people in the Isle of Wight, they can't get their teeth done there, so they're going on what they're calling the Tooth Fairy. They're going on this dentistry trips to France. And it's a lovely, it's a bit like a booze cruise, really, because it's a nice day out. You know, you go off on the boat, you become unconscious, and when you wake up, you've got a few teeth missing. So
all I remember about seaside holidays as a kid is picking oil spill and krill out of knitted trunks while the seagulls pecked my nan's eyes out.
Went somewhere exciting.
And we used to have those hard-boiled eggs with the black yolks. You don't see them anymore so much. Do you remember them? It's all black and white in those days. Earth noir, monochrome. It's more atmospheric. It's all colour now.
People on the Isle of Wight are planning to travel to France for dental treatment because they're afraid of the needles. Most people on the Isle of Wight were surprised to discover that cheap dental treatment is available in France, as they'd previously thought that if they sailed south, they would fall off the ends of the earth. At the end of round two, everybody's still level. And we go on to our final round with an item from the Highland Council's Summer Walks and Events leaflet.
Cape Roth to Curveig Bay, all day 5-mile clifftop walk over boggy ground, spectacular scenery and seabirds. NB, this walk may be subject to weather, tides or Ministry of Defence bombing.
Thanks to Phil Ward of Edinburgh for that. Andy, Eureka, who's found it?
Is this an archaeological story?
No, not at all.
Have you got any idea, Jeremy, what
it's Ulrika Johnson. Ulrika Meinhof. It's a brain thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Go on, Sandy, you seem to know.
Well, it's not surprising that the girls will know this, because it's more to do with intuition than anything else.
Oh, you're so beguiling with your cunning wiles.
I think so. There's a bit of the brain that instead of doing things in a linear manner, which is your boy's way of doing things, you know, A, B, C, D, you just go A, D, like that, and that is your eureka moment. That is your bit of your brain that just makes a sort of an instant decision. And in fact, curiously, they did some tests in NASA years ago. I don't know why this is supposed to be a new thing. And they worked out that women would make rather better astronauts than men because we problem solve in a completely different way, which is that we tend to use the eureka bit of the brain. So meteorites coming at the space station, and the male astronaut will go, let me just think this through. If it comes towards me at a velocity of 4,000... and the woman goes, left!
Yeah, but at least the male astronaut hasn't left the shopping on top of the spacecraft. doesn't run out of petrol on Mars and ask their husband to phone the AA.
That is fair.
I was researching the brain for a piece once years ago, and I went to a neurology department and met this lovely man who I was introduced to him, and I said, well, what are you doing? He said, well, we're trying to find out which parts of the brain processes sound, makes you understand sound. So which part of the brain gives you the ability to recognise your wife's voice or the ability to interpret music as harmonic. And he says it's been fascinating. We've spent months studying this, and we think we've finally located the parts of the brain that analyse sound. And he showed me this. He'd got one of those sort of chromatic, multicoloured images of the brain, and I said, really? And what has your research proved? He says, well, the parts that process sound are here and here. And he pointed to two bits right next to the ears.
It's close.
Yeah. And then he said, rather sweetly, he said, I know, it's a lot of money to find out nature knows what it's doing.
Neuroscientists at the Northwestern University in Chicago believe they've isolated the part of the brain responsible for sudden flashes of inspiration. Archimedes had his sudden flash of understanding when he got into the bath. Isaac Newton had one when he sat near an apple tree. And George W. got one when he realized the door he'd been pushing at for half an hour was actually marked pull. Jeremy, who thinks schoolboys and schoolgirls have been getting up to monkey business?
Well, this is a misunderstanding because people think that the chimp is a monkey. And actually, it's not. It's a fish. It's part of the gut family. Apes and monkeys are different. Chimpanzees apparently have 99% of the same genes as Richard Littlejohn.
You say chimps and apes are different. They are different, but I think if they turned on us, they'd side with each other.
Yeah. No, but chimps eat monkeys, I was horrified to learn. Because the reason that chimpesses... Lady chimps,
yes,
are more intelligent than men chimps is,
no,
because they eat termites, which are very high in protein, whereas the male chimps are always running up the tree to get the Christmas tree lights down from the loft. The men chimps eat monkeys, apparently, which I'm horrified, because we think of chimps as sort of tea-drinking gentlefolk. Actually, they are...
They're always so well-dressed.
I know.
A team from the University of Minnesota claims that young chimpanzees show the same gender differences in learning that young humans do. Young males are easily distracted, spend much of their time picking fleas off each other, fighting and scratching themselves. And the same holds true for chimps. So, Linda, which old mouse is a getting shaky? Which old mouse is a getting old?
It's the old mouse.
Mm-hmm.
This old mouse. Scientists have bred the oldest laboratory mouse. Now, the mouse is called Yoda. And the little mouse that looks after this old mouse, its carer, I suppose, is called Princess Leia. So I think that tells us quite a lot about the scientists in question.
How old is he?
Terrible nightmares.
He's 136, and he's
that's in human years.
In human years, four. He's genetically modified. He's got corn
he's
for ears.
Four. I'm four. He keeps going. I'm four. But all the other mice get really. I'm four. I've seen some changes here. Oh, it was all fields one time. I remember you could leave your cage open all day and no one would fit electrodes to your genitals. It was lovely round here. Oh, dear, I'm getting one of those Stanner exercise wheels.
What's the point in having a senile experimental mouse? Because they just put him in mazes, don't they?
Poor thing. All he wanted was a hearing aid and he stuck a big ear in the middle of his back.
Welcome to Ask the Scientist.
It's Yoda, a mutant dwarf mouse created at the University of Michigan Medical School, just celebrated his fourth birthday, making him the oldest mouse in the world. Asked where the mouse is now, a team member said, where? There on the stair. Where on the stair? Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
It's actually a genuine advert posted on an electronic notice board at the University of Bath. Wanted, dance partner. Hi. My name is Andy, and I'm a final year student. I have recently lost my dancing partner as we split up. I would like to find a new dancing partner, but am very particular about who I dance with. My ideal partner would be 5 foot to 5 foot four. If any taller, would look silly as I'm only short, and have dark hair with an Italian look. Hair colour is not that important, though, as you can always dye it. She must be very committed and willing to train at least 5 times a week, 2 hours each session. She must also be able to take criticism, as I will tell her if she is dancing badly or putting on weight, etc. Finally, there must be a certain chemistry between us, as it makes all the difference. Hope to find a partner soon. Andy.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by John M.G. Layton of the Broadway. And it's from a magazine called CGA, Country Gentlemen's Association or something. Wants. Active lady required to help busy widow due to imminent retirement of present Pearl after 15 years. Cook, housekeeper, country and animal lover, car driver, computer knowledge and advantage, Kent overlooking Romney March, spade bitch welcome.
Sandy.
This has been sent in by Liz Rogers, who lives in Nottinghamshire, but it's from the Sun newspaper in Malaysia. A Brazilian man who went to a clinic to have an aching ear checked ended up having a vasectomy after mistakenly believing that the doctor had called his name. Manager at the Dr. José Carlos de Espírito Santo Clinic said that on Wednesday, farmer Valdemar López de Mores, 39, who was not hearing well, entered the vasectomy room when the name of Aldemar Aparecido Rodriguez was called. He was called by the full name and yet thought it was him. The strangest thing is he asked no questions when the doctor started preparations in the area which had so little to do with his ear. He later explained that he thought it was an ear inflammation that had got down to his testicles.
Linda.
Oh, this was sent in by Ian Savin of Newbury. It's from the Newbury Weekly News. It's from the classified ads. Free wheelchair will collapse. And also another advert. Newbury Sunday Market. Every Sunday.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Andy and Jeremy have 12, but this week's winners, the ladies, with 17. Before we leave you, here's an item from the letters column of the Daily Telegraph.
Sir, the reference to the Kenya Times headline, Banana Accused of Sodomy, letters, November the 17th, reminds me of one in the Bolton Evening News. Man pays for sex with 56 pounds of potatoes.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Sandy Toksvig and Linda Smith. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Lucy Clark and Simon Littlefield. And the producer was Simon Nichols.